I believe your first experience of treading the boards was at prep school, at the age of 8, playing Henry the Fifth.
Do you know...
Abridged version, surely.
No, it's interesting you say that, because I would have said that, too. But my dear friend, 6'4" friend, Christopher Lee, who was in that production, played Mowbray, swore to me only the other day. He also revealed some other very interesting things about his character. I didn't realize that he did very secret intelligence work during the war. He's a very brave man. But he said to me, yes, Patrick, you played Henry V uncut. So I'm now, at the age of 8, I hasten to add. So I go around and I say, oh, yes, I played Shakespeare's Henry V uncut. And it's the same way you say, well, I was a captain of my ship in 1940. What do you mean a captain of your ship? How old were you? Well, I was 19. Well, how could you be captain of your ship? Well, it was a very small ship. It was a motor torpedo boat, 71'6".
We most of us are in school plays,
sure,
but we don't all become actors. But
no.
Did this set your feet on the path?
Well, you know, I don't think it's that. I subscribe to the view that Glenda Jackson gives, that broken homes provide more actors, in fact, most creative artists. And I think when you're shoved about from pillar to post and put out here and put out there, or sent abroad, or denied access to one's parental love, you have to use it in other ways. And that's very much a case with me, and it was fully developed not only at Summerfields, my prep school, but at Eton. And they were very creative people, and they encouraged us into this area. And apart from running a very successful betting shop at Eton, which I eventually got sacked, I really was into the arts in a big way.
You throw that away. I mean, now that is perfect timing. I mean, that's proper John Steed timing. You ran a betting shop and got sanked.
Yes, and flogged. And not necessarily in that order. But I'm very successful until I finally lost it all at Ascot, and it was disaster.
I think perhaps I won't ask you any more about that. Or we might
no, that's a very subterranean area, I can tell you.
Well, now, you started...
I can name names, but I won't. Right, on you go. Sorry.
So... You went to drama school, Webber Douglas?
Yeah, for a very short time, for 9 months, and learnt absolutely nothing, not even how to cope with my diaphragm. Then, as it was the very beginning of the war, I answered an advertisement and went into a rep at Letchworth Garden City, a very chaste area for a repertory, and I stayed there. And then I was an understudy, general understudy, with Vivian Leigh in The Doctor's Dilemma at the Haymarket Theatre, and I came in because poor Cyril Cusack had an accident on St. Patrick's Day and fell down at Vivian Leigh's feet and was fired, and Peter Glenville was brought in, and I was his understudy. And then, this is 1942, and then I was called up for the Navy, and the understudy took over from me. He was beaten up by a gang of thugs in the Haymarket, and Sir John Gielgud played the part better than anybody at 48 hours' notice. But then I was 5 years in the Navy, and then I came back again.
Well, that's sort of a lifetime encapsulated in a few words, and it all sounds absolutely marvellous.
Years ago, right. It's another world.
Does it feel like another war?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So does the war, thank goodness.
Do you think back to those days very much?
Very, very little. But, no, whole other life. I thought my life was ruined at the age of 20 when I went in the Navy, when all the others, Michael Redgrave, James Mason, Dennis Price, Stuart Granger, were all becoming movie stars. The first test I did for a movie, I couldn't do it because I went in the Navy, and Stuart Granger played the part, Thursday's Child. Oh, I was a great star monkey. And most miserable, and I crept back in 1946 when I came out of the Navy, started all over again through the good offices of Tennant's and Kitty Black, and worked my way through and up and back, and then finally got a family, couldn't support them, emigrated to Canada, assisted passage, 1952, and became a star of Canadian television, but that was useless because there were only 80 sets in the whole continent, so nobody knew that I was a star of television alongside Christopher Plummer, Kate Reid, many other eminent Donald Sutherland, Canadian actors. But well, I was always in the forefront of things, way before anybody cared. I was walking down Piccadilly, and an ex-producer from Hollywood said, "You're my producer." I said, "Of what?" He said, "I'm making a Western." I said, "Well, what's it about?" He said, "It's about Sir Winston Churchill." I said, "What?" In fact, he had got the war books of Sir Winston, and he was making them into a series, which turned out to be The Valiant Years. I was the associate producer. We had Richard Burton narrating it and John Schlesinger directing it. I was enormously proud of it, and I was a producer. And one day, Sidney Newman, who was the head of ABC at that time, he was later the head of the BBC drama, and he said, "Do you want to be in a series over Christmas?" I said, "Well, what is it? I don't think so. I'm a producer now, you know." And I was frightfully proud of myself, earning £50 a week. So he said, "It's called The Avengers." I said, "I don't know, I might. I'll do it for £300 a week. He said, "What?" You don't get that sort of money. Anyway, they gave me £150 a week, which was twice as much as they intended, because they thought it was for a fortnight, for an episode, you see. So, because I was so confident, because I was a producer, I got this marvellous part in this television series, which I thought was just over Christmas for 3 months. And 9 years later, I was still doing it. So, yes, I've called that success.
It wasn't quite the same, was it, when it started? It was you and
Ian Hendry. Now, God bless him, dead.
And then the sort of switch of bringing in Honor Blackman.
Well, it was all done by expediency, which, of course, a great deal of our business, as you well know, is the reason for most things, for quite a lot of the things. In the first place, Ian left. Ian was a very, very brilliant man, and he burned himself out in a way, but he then became a movie star, and we were left with a gap and about 10 scripts written for Ian Hendry. And Sydney, who was a wonderful maverick, said, we'll have it as a woman. We'll have it a mixture of Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, and Margaret Bourke White, the photographer on Life magazine. That's what we'll have. But he hadn't got the money to change the scripts, so we thought of different girls and Nari Dawn Porter and, lovely, lovely actresses. And then finally got Honor Blackman. But she had to do the scripts that had been written for Ian Hendry, so she got the idea of playing it very much as a sort of an aggressive person, and so it arose out of that. It all arose out of expediency. Then Honor left, and suddenly we went on to film, and we did tests and got Di Rigg, and she brought her own inimitable. I'm going to cavalcade with her soon, and we'll be, and you know, and her Cleopatra and everything at Chichester. She's a great, great actress. So I think those chance things brought it as a show which had an impact because of those sort of things. Then it sort of fell off later on.
Chances. Very important, isn't it?
Don't you think so?
While you were doing The Avengers, also working in the theatre, going to the States.
It's interesting you say that. Towards the end, I was offered Girl in My Soup, Not Now, Darling, various plays. And I got into a sort of, I think you do in television, you get so into the those awful hours, and I didn't think I could, and I should have done. Then I made a dreadful mistake in 69, when really I was doing pretty well here. I went back to California again, where I've been ever since, which in terms of life was good, because my daughter's an asthmatic and it helps her out there, but in terms of career, I should have stayed here. I'm now a sort of, you know, I'm a journeyman actor. I could have been much, much bigger, much more successful. I could have played Sleuth in London. I could have done many things. I don't regret them, but I would have been much more successful. You use the word success. So I would say I was successful in the 60s, and I've gone down ever since. But strange enough, I'm pretty happy.
Now, you've been doing, to some extent, what I think is a marvellous idea, the sort of cameo appearances here and there, different things, which, you know, you can go into sort of fun films then without minding that they are only trivial films. One that I thought was great fun, perhaps it wasn't such fun to you, but that was The Howling.
Yes.
Splendid movie. All of you, I think you included, turned into werewolves.
That's right. I didn't even know what a werewolf was, and I went into a shop and said, I want to know something about werewolves. They said, we've just got a book in called Werewolf, which was very handy to me, as you know. Yes, it was directed by Joe Dante, who did Gremlins, as you know, the following year.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought The Howling was very good, didn't you?
Very
I mean,
well
in
done.
That sort of feel, it had a sense of humour. It was quite extraordinary. They did no camera tricks. All that was done by young Rob Bottin. And that big love scene in the Redwoods there by those two kids when turning into 10-foot werewolves was done literally by putting makeup on step by step. And it was quite incredible.
It was a very good film. I do agree with you. And what else have you done that we can be seeing?
Well, you see, I could run through some titles which I hoped would never see the light of day, but due to cable do, and they range from Sweet 16, The Creature Wasn't Nice, Hot Touch, directed by Roger Vadim, his last film, actually rather good, about art forgery. And finally, this is Spinal Tap. Have you seen that one?
Oh, yes, I enjoyed that. Great fun.
Directed by Carl Reiner's son, Rob Reiner, and for which I was paid an extraordinary small fee, but the promise of quite large points. So, yes, I've been very lucky in being in these strange, interesting, progressive films, and I have a sneaking feeling it is because I come cheap. No, I make money on commercials, so I like to act for the pleasure of it, and not for the money.